Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And Zach.
Oh, wow. We have a full boat today. We must be talking about something very special this week.
Or we're really bored.
Okay. No. Of course, we're here to talk about the biggest movie of 2015.
It is...
Jurassic World came back to the theaters?
No. But it beat the Jurassic World records from everything that I've read. And of course, we are talking about Star Wars The Force Awakens. And before we get into it, guys, I have to ask, I was really confused by this movie, okay?
Okay.
So, I mean, it was so different than every other Star Wars movie. Like, first off, they didn't have the Skrull at the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
And I was like, well, that's really weird. And then the whole thing took place on just one planet, which was very similar to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the three main characters seemed to be these aliens. And the one was wearing a red shirt, had a big yellow A on it. And the other had a green shirt.
Dave, I think you went to the wrong
theater. I think you might have wandered into the wrong theater there, buddy.
Wait, what?
Did you switch tickets with your kids again?
Wait, what are you saying? What do you mean I saw the wrong movie? What movie did I see?
Sounds like you saw the new Chipmunks movie, Road Chip.
I was going to say Revenge of the Ewoks, but, you know, same difference.
Damn it. All right, we'll have to do this later.
Road Chip, can we talk Road Chip? Great film. Just a masterpiece.
No. I'm just kidding. Yes, I did see The Force Awakens, and we're here to talk about it. And before we get into it, people, as always, when we review a movie, there will be spoilers. So if you haven't seen it yet, which I find that doubtful at this point, please wait till after the movie you've seen the movie to listen. Or if you don't care about spoilers, then go ahead and listen.
I will say, Dave, right off the top of the bat, this film gave me new hope for the Star Wars franchise as it continues. The Disney Empire strike back, and it's the return of the Jedi form that we know and love.
Ah, and there was no fear of a Phantom Menace coming in and ruining the movie.
No, Lucas was kept well at bay.
Yes. No Jar Jar.
No Jar Jar.
Oh, so I don't know how to begin this. Let's see. Okay, so let's start off with, it is the biggest movie opening weekend of all time. At officially, I believe it's $247 million was their opening weekend, which beats Jurassic World, who was at $208 million.
Yes.
So I think every nerd on the planet went out and saw this. Some saw it twice.
I'd heard that it broke that record, the worldwide weekend record, and fastest to $100 million.
Yes.
Well, I think it missed the worldwide because the movie that does hold that also opened in China at the same time. I think that was Avatar.
Yeah, that is the difficulty. Yeah, that's the one thing that they haven't hit yet is the total box office, which you won't know for weeks. And yeah, that did not open in China, which does sort of hurt its ability to smash all the records. But it did well.
So when this movie first premiered in Hollywood, they had their red carpet premiere. There were lots of buzz. There was lots of celebrities buzzing about it afterwards. Some even went as far as to say, better than Empire, you know. Some said the best movie since 1980. Some said the best movie since 1983. Some said it was better than Empire. So let's just quick go around the room and ask, did you feel that it was better than the originals, as good, or somewhere in between? So, Ben.
I knew you were going to come to me first. I would say it's definitely eclipses all of the prequels, but that's a very low bar to cross.
Yes.
Well, the Chipmunks did that.
That's true. they did enforce. I don't think I would go so far as to say that it was better than Empire. I would say it was probably I would put it on par with A New Hope, around that level.
How about you, Zach?
Well, I should preface it by saying that I grew up watching the original trilogy on VHS on repeat, and this is going to hurt a lot of people, but Return of the Jedi was my favorite because, man, did I love those furry little Ewoks. So, you know, yes, I know. John, I'm glad you're on drugs and you're a little sleepy now because you might be really mad if I had said that when you were salient or sober. But I think, I mean, those movies, I couldn't really appreciate everything about them because I saw them in my youth. So I will say that, yes, I think this movie is better than any of them. But again, I haven't really watched those films since, I mean, probably my teenage years. So I wasn't really in the state of mind capable of actually analyzing a film. So for what it's worth, I thought The Force Awakens was a great film on its own right, and that it also brought back all of the great elements of those films while weaving out some of the, dare I say, campier aspects of those movies. So I enjoyed it more, and I was transfixed and transcended, and I can't wait for the future of the franchise.
All right. And Johnny Boy?
It is the best worst film I've ever seen.
Oh,
interesting. Interesting.
The best worst film.
Let me explain. This movie has all of the action you could possibly hope for, but it has a little too much Star Wars in it. Let me explain further.
I thought you were a fan, John.
I am a fan. Let me put it to you this way. If it had been, just a new volume here so I don't blow anybody's ears out. So if it had been written by anybody else, it would have been perfect. But because it's J.J. Abrams and because he has to Michael Bay everything, we got a really exciting film that when you walk out the door after having watched it, you are in heaven. And then 5 seconds later, you begin to realize all of the plot holes, all of the bad writing, all the things that are just completely out of character. I still liked the film. I could watch it again a couple of more times at least. But by the same token, what it's going to do to the franchise is the same thing that J.J. Abrams is doing to Star Trek, which is basically making it an action franchise and not what the franchise was originally loved for.
Well, I have to say, I want to shift your blame a little bit, because JJ didn't write the script. He just directed the movie. There were other people involved in the script writing process. So, and there were several people who advised on this aside from JJ Abrams. You know, there was all of Disney, Kathleen Kennedy, and various other people overseeing this movie. So it'd be difficult to, I think it'd be a little bit farcical to blame JJ for any and all of the faults of this movie.
I don't know. I saw some lens flares in there.
actually, the official buy on the scripts are JJ Abrams, yep. Michael. Michael A.M. Arndt,
and Lawrence Kasdan.
Right, and Lawrence Kasdan also wrote
Empire Strikes Back.
Thank you.
And Return of the Jedi, right?
And Return of the Jedi, I believe.
So, I don't blame JJ because, I mean, you had the same screenwriter who gave us Empire and Jedi working
on this. And Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And yes. So, no, I don't think he's to be fully blamed for what you see as the shortcomings of this movie.
I agree. I don't blame him. I praise him for the exact same reasons. But anyways, continue.
So what I found interesting when I walked out of the theater, building a little bit on what John said, not saying I felt like I thought about it afterwards, because I did think about it afterwards, and there were a couple of things I was like, eh, but I've seen they have, some of my issues have been addressed in interviews that he's done since the release. and we'll get to those in a minute. But it was what I really was thinking is, wow, he laid the gauntlet down. He created a new set of characters in the universe we already know. He changed some of the rules, and he gave mysteries that now he's walking away. I think he might be consulting, but he's not writing or directing anymore. So now, well,
he's not involved as a director of episode 8.
Right, but he set up things that have to be answered in episode 8. So,
oh yeah.
So
this was clearly set up as the start off of a new trilogy, and it's evident with how many questions they left unanswered.
Yes, exactly.
But wasn't that what made the original trilogy so great? I mean, that
it was definitely
was the but, core. Of
yes,
but it
and
was
no.
the same. It's
I will
the
say
same
that
trilogy.
The, I will
it's
say
setting
the
up the same trilogy. They blew up another Star Killer.
Well, they did the same thing in Return of the Jedi. But what I was going to say is the difference here is that in Star Wars, they set up all this world. They didn't necessarily leave you with a bunch of questions, per se. They left you with a handful. They answered a lot of questions in The Empire Strikes Back that you didn't even know you had. Like, you wouldn't have even... We weren't even wondering, I think, necessarily, coming out of Star Wars, like, who Luke's father might have been, right, or if he had any other family, or what other Jedi are there in the universe. None of those questions were left open, but they were answered with the follow-up films. They did continue to flesh things out and introduce new things that we didn't even think to question. This one did very clearly leave a lot of questions unanswered,
right?
Which with the impetus that those will get further fleshed out in the future movies.
Yeah, I think something a lot of people need that have criticized some of the things in this movie. One of the things you have to keep in mind is A New Hope is a complete movie. It's a complete story. It has a beginning, middle, and end. The reason it was done that way, with only leaving a slight door open for a sequel. The reason it was done that way is Lucas never thought he was going to get the ability to do a sequel.
He barely got the backing to finish the movie as it was.
Right. So then when they're like, oh no, it did well, do a sequel, he could expand upon the ideas that he had, letting us know Vader is Luke's father and all those things. With this movie, they didn't give us a complete movie. They gave us a beginning. They set it up and they said, okay, now you're going to need an act 2 and an act 3 to finish this story. So, you need to keep that in mind, I think, when you judge this movie.
I do think, though, that I'm very forgiving of that, because I think it's one of the things that's made a lot of serial programming, such as the Netflix Marvel shows, great, is that they know their finite story arc. They know that they have additional episodes. So instead of trying to make encapsulated stories, they're taking you on a journey. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with open questions and not knowing, who Rey's parents are, or origin is, or some of the other things that are open right now with this movie. I'm perfectly okay with that, because I'm on board and I enjoyed the ride.
Absolutely. And I think it's a new era of storytelling in which that happens in the cinema as well. I mean, we've got movie universes, and the Marvel Studios, Avengers, all those, and then DCEU that's coming up. And now everyone is trying to do that. Hasbro and God, who knows what else with, Transformers and all that horrible stuff. But when it's done well, it makes for an even more transcendent story, because it's as you said, they can just put so much more into it. There's just so much more to experience. And so I don't mind that there is more story to be, delved or mined.
Yeah. I think it's also, to me, it feels like a promise that, yeah, we know that we didn't answer these questions. We know we left this open-ended, and that's because we intend to follow through and answer those questions with more content, and I'm okay with that.
Right. I kind of felt, hold on, let me think. How do we want to continue? Okay.
I'll be the naysayer here, obviously. I'm the devil's advocate because
all right, so let's try this. We're going to go around the room. And I'm going to say, in this movie, not in the entire Star Wars universe, but in this particular movie, who was your favorite character in the movie? Zach, we'll start with you.
I would say Rey. I loved John Boyega. John Boyega. Boyega. as Finn. I thought he was phenomenal, but Rey was mesmerizing. I just finished reading an article on The Verge by Tasha Robinson, who I want to give credit because it was a phenomenal article about Rey specifically and strong female characters. And there's Max Landis has come out to say that she is a, quote, Mary Sue, meaning that she can do everything and she's infallible and she's flawless. And Tasha Robinson, this article that she wrote, is saying that's all true, but why is that a problem? I mean, Ethan Hunt in the Mission Impossible movies is flawless. He can do whatever is required. And
I think the Mary Sue assessment is kind of bullshit, because I mean,
exactly.
wasn't Luke just as much of one in the original Star Wars?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think anyone who is making that argument probably hasn't been paying attention the whole time to these movies. Like, the Jedi are naturally in tune to do a lot of the things that she did in this movie.
No.
So,
no.
What do you mean?
It took Luke Skywalker 3 movies to get to the point where he could actually think to challenge Darth Vader. And even then, Yoda told him he wasn't ready, and he basically wasn't. She did it in about 5 freaking minutes.
You're assuming she had zero training. And I argue that, A, I think she's... And this is delving into things now. I believe she was one of the only surviving trainees from Luke's Jedi camp. She was abandoned by Luke to protect her, much the way that Luke was abandoned to protect him. And secondly, this is a hypothesis at this point. And secondly, everything that she figured out and learned to do, she did by copying Kylo Ren. By seeing him do it and mirroring him and doing it herself. And so,
with no while training that is a, whatsoever, that is a fast she challenged track. Kylo Ren to a lightsaber duel and beat him.
Yes.
After he's been heavily trained for decades.
But a wounded Kylo Ren, who is also not supreme.
On a planet that was blowing up. So
he was. Kylo Ren was shot and stabbed by at that point. So he was extremely wounded.
Yeah, but one force push or one bit of force lightning and she would have been down and it could have taken her. It would have taken half a second.
Was nearly high enough for him to pull something like that off.
Kylo Ren's making
so many excuses now.
No, I think Kylo Ren, like, the point of Kylo Ren is that he is flawed. He's not a Darth Vader who we see who is just this unstoppable super villain who, you know, the hero has to train forever to be able to overcome. Right. It's a completely different story. It's subverted.
Yeah, but train more than 5 minutes.
And I actually also liked the fact that there was hints that, like, that Kylo Ren was suffering from that sense of persuasion that Luke felt in the opposite direction. Like, feeling that pull to the light side and trying to fight it. That I found an interesting struggle in this movie.
Also, a lot of Luke's journey was about his self-doubt in the original movie. So that's why it took him so long to go up against Darth Vader and win, because he had doubted himself that he was going to be destroyed or turned to the dark side. She had no reason to think any of that. You know, she was
a fairly self-confident person.
Right. So,
and that scene in the holding cell or torture chamber, whatever you want to call it, where Kylo Ren is interrogating her, that's when she first sort of realizes her own potential, and when she's able to back him down, not because she's trained forever, but because she has it within her, that ability. Then she learns instead to just trust herself from that point and actually try to do something going forward, instead of Luke, who in the original movies just kept saying, "I can't do it. No, I can't do it. It's too hard."
But you're just assuming that she's some kind of force genius, that she's automatically figuring all these things out on her own with no training whatsoever in literally 5 minutes. Not even a montage. Okay, we didn't even get a montage. So.
It doesn't make any sense.
Have you ever met somebody who was naturally gifted in music? Like, they started playing piano because at 3 years old, their family had a piano and they sat down and just started playing it. And then
But if that's the case, then the writers have already put themselves in a corner, because if she can do that in, say, a half an hour, imagine what happens after a year of training. There's going to be nobody that can beat her. She'll just walk through reams of stormtroopers like they weren't even there.
But then it becomes her learning how to balance and not get sucked into the dark side when she becomes too powerful.
And I think the story is as much about Kylo Ren as it is her. I think that's the difference. It's not really about a hero training to overcome the dark side. It's about the humanity on both sides and whatever we'll see come of that.
Yeah. And I do have to say, though, the one thing that you mentioned, the scene between her and Kylo Ren with in the holding chamber. And we saw there one thing that I don't think we've ever seen via force powers in any of the movies. And that is, was a literal battle of wills, you know, mind versus mind. And that sort of battle, I don't think we've ever seen happen in a Star Wars movie before.
Yeah, that was phenomenal.
That's what happens when you direct a Star Trek movie first and you learn about the Vulcan mind meld and then you do a Star Wars movie. Well, I just thought that was weird that all of a sudden they're showing people Kylo Ren being able to read minds with the Force. Like,
that's not a far-fetched thing. I mean, Darth Vader did the same thing. And so did Yoda.
Did he read their minds?
No, he didn't.
How do you think Darth Vader figured out that he had a sister? He read it in his mind. He picked it up from Luke.
He picked it up from his feelings, which you could argue is the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Thank you for undermining your own argument there, Dave.
Yes, yes. I realized it as I said it.
That's after years of training, and she's battling him She's battling him with force will in 5 minutes. Sorry, I'm going to keep harping on that.
Her life is on the line. Why would if you find yourself in that situation and you have any ability to fight desperately against anything, you're going to do everything in your power and maybe do things that are extraordinary and beyond what you believed you could do.
Mm-hmm. Any Mary Sue would do that.
Oh my God, the Mary Sue assessment is frankly insulting because it's only being issued because she's a girl.
No. She's doing everything. Luke Skywalker was supposedly the most powerful Force user they had seen. They trained him to be a weapon. And even then, it took years to train him to get him to the point to be where he could be a good balance for his father, where he could actually challenge him. She did it literally over the course of running through the new Super Death Star.
That's because all of Kylo Ren's courses were correspondence courses.
And also keep in mind that, yes, the idea was hopefully Luke would bring balance to the Force, but it was his father who did it anyway. But we're not going to get into the old movies. Speaking of the chamber, the holding chamber, did anyone pick up on the cameo?
In the holding chamber, yes. So there was a stormtrooper that she convinced to let her go, that one.
Yes.
Yes. So in case you guys were not aware that Dave is referencing, that stormtrooper was Daniel Craig.
Yes. That's why James Bond. That's why he said restraints, holding restraints. Oh, wait, no. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny because I just saw that article today. Like, I did not pick up on that at all when I saw it.
No, it's easy to miss those types of things. Like their voices, they don't speak distinctly enough to tell one from the other based on their voices. The only one that was really distinct was Phasma as being the only female stormtrooper that spoke. But yeah, otherwise they all sort of blend together with the way that their helmets alter the way that they sound.
Right. So so I'm just glad, and I'm not coming off as a sexist one, by the way, in this conversation.
It's John's turn.
So Ben, who yes. is your favorite character in this movie?
Well, it's hard not to pick Rey as my favorite character. She was a really phenomenal character in this movie and really a key character. Let me think about that. Just to go in a different direction, because I don't want us all to toot the same horn, I'm going to go with Finn. I think I really enjoyed, while he didn't turn out to be like the hero of the movie, he was really a character you could relate to, a character who had struggles that you could put yourself in his shoes and see, you know, and walk that path and see yourself making the same choices.
Right. What I actually found most fascinating about him, and my wife and I were having this conversation, is that he, in today's world where, you know, Superman is now a dark character,
mm-hmm.
he was trained as a stormtrooper from the time he was young. Even though he worked in sanitation most of the time. And then he gets
to his first battle.
Oh, did you, before I go on, that actually is a shout out to, I believe it's Clerks. And they're there's a scene
when they were Clerks when they were debating about the death of all the
They're talking about the plumbing on the Death Star, and one of the characters is like, Stormtrooper doesn't know how to install a toilet. Well, guess what? JJ answered that question.
Yes,
Stormtrooper does. But in a world where Superman is now a dark character, and every good guy needs a real motivating factor, he decided to be a good guy for the sake of being a good guy. Like, no, this is wrong. I want to do the right thing. You know, right. He realized that he was on the wrong side. And it was just like, I'm shocked they got away with that. But yeah. No, I mean, I think he was my favorite character in the movie. So
yeah.
What did you think of him, Zach?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you could pick him or Ray. Either way, I see your point. I mean, he was the relatable one. If you're tired of someone being too heroic, which I'm not in Ray, but yeah, I mean, it was both he and Daisy Ridley just did a superb job of acting, and I thought, you know, Finn's, I love their dynamic, the two of them, how he's constantly trying to save her or trying to be the savior when she is constantly saving him. I thought that was a funny and enjoyable subversion there. And he was just a ton of fun and just a good guy. And he is just a pleasure to watch on screen.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed him trying to lie his way through being part of the resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first half of the movie. That was just amusing. I was like, you know, he's going to get caught in some of this at some point and have to fess up to the truth.
Yeah. His comedic timing is just spot on. He is so funny throughout. I mean, I was surprised how funny the movie was. It was consistently funny through. I don't think there were any jokes that really missed.
Yeah.
But how could it be funny if they don't have Jar Jar in it? I don't know.
I mean, that's the one thing it was missing, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad.
He said funny, not tragically funny.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, John, who is your favorite character?
I'd have to say BB-8. He's the only one who didn't act out of character.
He's smart and adaptable, too, because I liked how when he was bouncing around on the Millennium Falcon, he finally tethered himself to avoid further.
Yeah, you don't see any others do that. They just bounce all over the place. Yeah. Seriously, it's the only character in the entire movie that did everything the way it would have, the way it should have, without breaking out of character. It just, you know, I'm sticking with that. That's it. You look at anything else, and it's like you've got a Sith Lord who can't beat a janitor. You've got, and then he takes on somebody who's had 5 minutes of force training on, you know, through a correspondence course and barely beats her. So he's obviously gone. You've got Han Solo who walks up to his son who just murdered trillions of people, and his only reaction to his, come on, son, you know this ain't you, right? I mean, how else did you think that was going to work out?
You gotta try.
Okay, hold on. I need to correct you there, before we go any further, Kylo Ren is not a Sith Lord. He's a Knight of Ren.
Exactly.
It's another faction of the dark side of the Force.
Yeah, how come we didn't see any other Knights of Ren?
There was a flash of them, but he's supposedly the most powerful. There was a flash of the other ones at some point in the movie. But yeah, they weren't all teamed up in that one spot. If you have a powerful wielder, you have to spread them out.
If he's the most powerful, all we need is a good team of janitors. We could probably take them.
Yep, probably.
Yes.
That's pretty wheel, all right?
I will say that. I will say this. A lot of people seemed more upset about Rey being able to pick up the lightsaber and fight Kylo Ren than they were about Rey picking up the lightsaber and fighting her.
Finn one of those times.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
I think the latter time. Yeah,
yes. I meant the latter. Yes, there. Then Finn being able to do it. Where, as far as we know, he's not a Jedi. He's right. a stormtrooper who was given the lightsaber because he didn't have it. They didn't have any other weapon for him.
Yeah, well, it was probably shaped like one of his big wrenches or something, and he's used to it.
Well, to be fair, I don't think there's anything that's explicitly stated that, at least in the original trilogy, that lightsabers cannot be wielded by other people.
Oh, no, no.
By non-force wielders. And to be fair, the prequels actually established that they could. General Grievous was not a wielder of the Force, but he wielded four lightsabers at once.
Yes,
he wielded four of them because he kept cutting off his own limbs by trying to wield them. So they gave him extra, you know, just in case.
But actually, speaking of Kylo Ren, I thought he was an interesting character. And as I alluded to in the beginning, like, he obviously is the main person using the Force in the movie. And they showed him doing things that we have never seen any Jedi, Sith, or whatever do before. First off, the mind. There's an elephant coming. First off, the mind reading piece that we already talked about. And then how about when they were on the planet and he stopped the laser blast?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That I did not see coming. But I think a lot of that can be chalked up to the fact that so some of the things that, and I'm going to cite the prequels now, unfortunately, but but some of what they were establishing in those things is that the Force is vast and can do a lot of different things. The light and the dark side really aren't that far apart from each other, and there's a wide spectrum of things in between that the Force can allow. Not everybody knows everything. Even the greatest Jedi Masters, there are skills that they cannot do. Yoda, for all of his power and experience, couldn't wield Force lightning, and I find it highly doubtful that that's only because he's on the light side. It just wasn't a skill that he honed. And along those lines, I think with factions such as these, you know, different factions can come across different sets of skills. And I think that that's one that the Knights of Ren, or maybe specifically Kylo Ren, has learned and mastered that no one else was aware of.
So right. So when, Kylo Ren can stop an incoming bolt of laser energy, but his kryptonite is a flailing janitor.
Right.
But what it boils down to is two things, really. I mean, it manifests itself in his abilities as telekinesis and telepathy. And that's it. And when you think of it that way, it's really not that awe-inspiring that he can do those two things.
Right.
Really
and
well.
To be fair, I always assumed that the way that the previous Jedi were able to constantly deflect every single shot that came from a stormtrooper was because they were using the Force to draw the shots into the beam.
Right.
So they're still bending, you know, the shots. They're still manipulating the trajectory. They're just not literally stopping them.
Right. Instead of the stormtroopers being the worst possible shot ever. Or the clone troopers.
They're just up against space wizards and they're not trained for it.
So when they all got wiped out at the end of episode 3, they all just forgot about how to do that?
Yes. Yes, they do.
I'm sorry, I mentioned one of the other movies of the other trilogy.
Yes.
yes. So I mean, I thought again, and I'll agree with Zach on this that you know, yeah, he used those two powers mainly, and he used them really well, and I can live with that. I just found it interesting that JJ decided to explore that. You know, like, hey, how about what if this guy can do things we've never seen before? You know, that's one of the things that made the movie interesting. Now we need to talk about the most important part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the intermission.
What?
The snack break.
No. There's no intermission.
R2-D2 waking up.
From
his nap.
Because this movie could have been called The Force Awakens, and then in parentheses, Han Solo's Last Adventure.
Han Solo's Last Stand. Now, what you don't know is as he falls, there's actually one of those carbonite freezing machines that catches him.
Louise.
And he is safely frozen in that near-death state. We'll come back later.
Before
it's you know it's well known that Harrison Ford did not like being pigeonholed as that character. He didn't like it, and he didn't really want to come back, and it took a lot to get him there.
Well, I think it was a valiant death. I'm okay with this being Han Solo's last film. If it is, I'm okay with it.
Let's before we talk about his death, let's talk about his character in the movie.
Yeah.
And before we get there, though, I will say this. John's right that he wanted to be killed in Empire.
Yeah.
Like that he just wouldn't survive the being frozen in the carbonite. And it did take a lot of coercing to get him to come back for Jedi.
Right.
He
had some really important carpentering things to do.
And I also also if you remember when they were talking about bringing back the original cast, he was the last one to agree to come back. But before we get to that, I did find it interesting. Like here we are 34 years later and we kind of hit a reset button on some of the characters.
I did find it a little weird that he went back to his smuggling game, just upped his, the size of his ship. And for some reason now deals in space octopuses, which is weird.
Well, that's happened what he was dealing with at that time.
Yes.
We don't know what else he was dealing with. Yes, he. So yeah, when we come across, which I'm surprised, this is another one that I'm surprised John hasn't flipped out over. When Rey and Finn are escaping the planet, they happen across a ship that just happens to be sitting there.
Right.
Of the ships in the galaxy.
No, I think that's number 13 on my list.
I enjoyed that. I thought that was great. That the one junk ship that they were forced to have to take happened to be the Millennium Falcon. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And I wonder, too, I mean, maybe we're jumping ahead, but who is Rey, really? Is she Han and Leia's daughter? And if that's the case, is it reasonable to suggest that the ship would be at least nearby in some similar quadrant?
No, I think she's Skywalker's daughter.
You think? Okay, so I wasn't sure if it would be Skywalker or Han and Leia, but it's got to be one of the two, right?
Maybe. I mean, I'm perfectly okay with the idea that maybe she's not a direct descendant of the Skywalker clan. But if I had to place bets, I would lean towards her being Luke's daughter, not Leia's.
Okay. She's actually Chewbacca's daughter, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah. Well, she has a really good razor at hand.
Well, you know, if we stay true to the original series, whoever she kisses first, that's probably her brother.
Well, wait. I think the only person she kissed was Finn.
Well.
And we don't know his parentage either, for that matter.
Mm.
Well, Abrams has got some explaining to do then.
Yes.
So they happen to take the Falcon, of course.
Yes.
And we won't, you know, yes, there's comedy ensued with that. But of course, because they took the Falcon, Han Solo finds them because obviously he's been looking for the ship.
Yeah.
So he's been tracking it. And so he brings that, he tractor beams them on, which,
just happens to find them.
I will say this. As soon as they got captured and they're like, oh no, it's the First Order and they're hiding in the plates under the floorboards. Yes. I knew that it was the scene that we saw.
Yeah.
In the preview, it just felt like, okay, no, this is where Han walks in. You know?
Yeah. That's what I felt too. I saw that one coming. I'm okay with that, but cause it was a matter of seconds, but yeah, I saw that was a bit telegraphed.
Yeah. And, but here's my question. And this is a serious question that I want everyone to give a good answer on, except for John. I kind of felt like, all right, yes, because of circumstances, because of what happened with their son, Ben, it drove Leia and Han apart and they both went back to, you know, their old lives or what they knew best.
Comfortable roles.
But I kind of felt like Harrison Ford, as Han Solo in this movie, was kind of walking a tightrope between the wise guy who's been around and has this information to give to these two kids and still trying to be the
scruffy rogue. Smuggler.
Yeah, the scruffy smuggler, the rogue he was in the original movies. Did anyone else kind of feel that way about him? Like,
well, I think that regardless of growth, that is part of his personality. Your personality is not going to go away over time. It gets more complicated with other layers. So I think some of what makes him that scruffy, you know, rogue character is always going to be there. It's always going to be part of who he is, even if it's subdued by other roles. it's always going to come forward in some ways. And I think, but yeah, I do think you're right in that you did see that vacillate a bit. Like at times he was being responsible and smart and showing you wisdom. And then other times was flying by the seat of his pants. Point to that, when they were his plan that he knew Leia wasn't going to like about how he was going to get through the shield, on the Starkiller. But yeah, I see what you're saying, but I think that it felt natural to me.
Yeah, and you get the sense that, I mean, he did escape that for 30 years, apparently, but he was going to inevitably be drawn back to it with, you know, like he was going to drop off Finn and Rey, and then the mention of Luke, and he knew that he couldn't really escape it or run from it forever. So, yeah, it didn't bother me at all.
And honestly, I think that if he's going back, if his escape from the events that lost him his son, so to speak, made his son into Kylo Ren, were to leave, you know, to stay away from Leia and go back into his old ways of smuggling, that attitude is going to serve him well in that role as it had before. So he is going to go back to that roguish character, you know, and has probably been acting that way for, you know, a decade or so, because that suits him well in the parties that he deals with.
Right, right. So I need to ask John a question here.
Have a
John. Yes.
If your daughter did something bad, let's say, you know, she gets older, she gets a drug problem and she knocks over a liquor store to get money, to get drugs, and then you run into her, you know, a year later, are you just going to run away, or are you going to go and try to, you know, talk to her?
Oh, you try to help her, but you don't walk up to her, take the gun in her hand, put it to your chest, and then say, come on. Just come on.
He didn't put it to his chest.
He held it in his hand, and it wasn't a gun. It was a sword.
Yes.
Really, it was a handle. Sword. For all intents and purposes, it was a handle that his son was handing him, and he didn't see the trap because he was blinded by his love.
Oh, yeah. I thought that scene was phenomenal. I thought it totally captured me, even though I knew, because I saw a freaking spoiler on Twitter that pissed me off so much, I knew it was going to happen. Still, it was so well done. That I thought for a moment that lying bastard on Twitter was lying. He wasn't. He was telling the truth, and I hate him so much. But I thought that scene just, it still took my breath away.
It wasn't superhero speak, was it?
I don't think they did enough.
It was not.
They didn't do enough character development on Kylo Ren for us to, for that scene really to mean as much as they wanted it to.
Oh, I disagree. That scene when he's talking to Vader's mask, and he can, I think Ben referenced it earlier, when he feels the draw to the light side, and you can tell the whole time that you don't know, like, I mean, he loses his cool all the time because he can't hold it together. He doesn't really know who he is. He's conflicted. Yeah. And so it's like that whole time you think there's a chance that he could be saved by the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. But there's nothing to anchor his character to other people. His only attributes were he gets pissed off and destroys everything around him, and he somehow has Darth Vader's mask, which he found in the debris of an entire moon explosion somehow. he's got
the
that
moon didn't
sitting
explode.
Around in his crib. That's those were his only two features.
How
there
do you know
any other dimension to his character?
How do you know Luke didn't take the remains of his father and bury them somewhere? And since his uncle.
We know what he did with them. We saw what he did with the ring.
Yeah. He burned
he
him
took
on
Vader
Endor.
Out of there, and he burned him in an altar on the forest moon of Endor.
Yeah,
and Kylo Ren's obsessed with Vader.
Yes, the mask was on him as he was burning.
Right, and since Luke is his uncle, of course he knows where the mask is, where the remains were. So he went and looked for and got them.
Like, all right, I'm scratching off number 35 then.
I mean that
got one.
That is the one thing where it's like, of course he could get the mask.
Right.
That
is easy. There is easy.
All right, yeah. but the argument still stands. Those are the only two features of his personality. Those are the only two things that we are given to be able to relate to him, and
but
that's not enough to relate to.
But the scene is about a love between father and son, and that's it. Like that's all you need to know.
Yes, but Han is smarter than that.
John, did you love Star Wars: The New Hope, Episode 4?
Episode 4. Yes. Yes, I like that one. Yes.
How much character development did Darth Vader get in that movie?
Let's see. Choke somebody else.
And he yells at people. And that's literally it.
I think there was a third guy he choked.
And he shoots at some X-Wings.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and then he choked one more guy.
Right. And then he flies away.
Well, then, oh, no, wait. He choked a third time, but that was when he was shooting at Luke Skywalker.
My point is, you're faulting character development when we got more character development, I think, for most of the characters in this movie than we got collectively in the original trilogy.
Absolutely.
We get three movies of character development for Darth Vader before he really confronts Luke.
Okay, right. And
even that was less than we got out of for Kylo Ren in this one movie.
Actually, it's funny. There's an interesting point about the original movies that I was reading an article the other day. Like a good example they were talking about with development and all that kind of stuff. Boba Fett is a great example. How many times is his name said in the original trilogy?
Is it said at all? I don't remember it being said.
It's said once. Right before he dies, when okay. Boba Fett's behind Han and Chewie says and Han's like, Boba Fett, Boba Fett, and then he gets hit. Yeah. He gets hit in his jetpack and boom, and he falls into the pit.
So technically it's twice.
But everybody knew his name.
Yes.
Because of marketing, because of the toys, because of
everyone
all that
stuff.
Everyone
knew his name when they were marketing for Empire Strikes Back, and his name's never mentioned in that.
Actually the reason why they know his name in any backstory at all is the Star Wars Christmas special. That's where most of that came from.
But what am
no, okay. I never saw that, and I refused to ever watch it.
Or
good move.
Like there's very little, there's not a lot of dialogue in those movies.
No.
And most of it is spoken by C-3PO,
right.
Who is there for exposition.
And tell me, John, how many of those bounty hunters can you name that were standing behind Darth Vader in Empire Strikes Back?
What does that have to do with anything?
You knew all of their names. Everybody knew all of their names. And none of them were ever named, except in the form of toy packaging.
Yeah.
Most of them never said a word.
And
or everyone
that,
knew...
How does that compare with characterization in the movie?
Everyone
people,
knew...
People love Boba Fett. People idolize Boba Fett as a character. And he had literally zero plot development. He had as much plot development as any given stormtrooper.
Right. Until they gave him plot development, then everybody said, wait, what? A clone?
No.
People loved Boba Fett long before the prequels.
Right, exactly. And all he did was fly a ship and get his jetpack hit and eaten by a Sarlacc pit.
Uh-huh.
But yet he's one of the favorite characters from the original trilogy.
Right, and the point being that people were so mesmerized by the novelty of all of it back then that you didn't really analyze the films. Or, I mean, I can only speak from, you know, three generations later, but that's what the sense I get.
But we're not that naive, and we're not in the same space as that. Because,
and you know what the irony is?
Back
is
then,
that...
this was all brand new. Now we've got, like, you know, you can spit and hit five different sci-fi movies.
Yeah, right. But I don't think it's fair to hold this up to the lens of time, you know, and I think you need to hold it up for what it is. Compared to other Star Wars movies, it had more plot development, more character development than many of the other Star Wars movies. It didn't suffer from any of the pitfalls that the prequel trilogy did. It has a lot going for it, and I think you're decrying it just out of your own curmudgeonliness.
Well, that's a given.
Yeah, you know, and I wholeheartedly agree. I think the magic of this movie for me was that it made me forget the cynicism of today. It harkened back to a time when the novelty of all this could take your breath away and could transport you to a place. And despite the fact that, yeah, here and there, there are a couple plot holes, there are a couple things that are just too easy, but who cares? Because it's entertainment, and it takes you to, you know, it transports you to a different world and universe and galaxy, and it's...
One far away.
Exactly. So I think that was what was so special about this particular movie for me, is that it was able to transcend the negativity and hyper scrutiny of every single detail that we have these days because of, you know, social media covering everything, and I was grateful for that experience.
Well, now wait a minute, I'm not finished yet, so
sorry.
I mean, we haven't even gotten into the Wrath Troopers yet.
Ugh.
Yeah, and why does Ron Weasley's older brother have to be such a dick in this movie?
Was that the same
yes.
guy? Okay,
that was Bill Weasley.
I was like, is that Bill Weasley? There's no way that's Bill Weasley.
Yes. He absolutely is, yes.
That scene if where he's addressing the army is
something. To be fair, if you see a ginger in a movie, it's probably been a Weasley.
That is a pretty good rule. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. Especially one with any sort of British accent.
Yes.
I was talking about the Wrath Troopers.
The Wrath Troopers?
Which ones were the Wrath Troopers?
The Wrath Tars on Han's ship. They immediately are able to kill everything except one of the main characters, who they then just randomly drag off long enough to be rescued.
Well, he was fooled by then. He just ate six people.
Standing immediately in front of them. So that's kind of, I mean, that's what happens, right, in these movies? The good guys always come out unscathed.
Yes, absolutely. They probably would have found a way that even if he did get eaten, he didn't get digested and he could get spit back out. At least they didn't go that far. But yes, I do sort of see your point that, yes, as soon as he got captured, I was like, well, that's crappy. I don't see how he's getting out of that. But I, in my mind, made the justification. I was like, well, he did just eat four or five other people. Maybe he's not so hungry at this point.
Exactly. I mean,
he's taking that back for a snack for later.
Well, he had two other guys that might have been hungry. He's trying to, as a snack for them, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. He could have had a brood. It could have been a mom.
He would think
there it is.
I give it to you, except for the references that Han and the other guys were making to the massacre of so and so, where like an entire city disappeared or something because of one of those things. It didn't seem like they got got full.
Did he ever say specifically one of those caused the massacre?
No, it wasn't specified at all. It was just the massacre in the place.
Right, there could have been hundreds of them.
Or if there were, John. Strike 42 off the list too.
Even if there are hundreds of them, you're talking, okay, let's see, if they get full after six people, six times 100, even if there are 1,000 of those things, you're talking a small settlement, not a city.
All right, just to change the direction of the conversation a little.
Okay.
I'm going to inject something that I didn't necessarily have a problem with, but I read about later, and it does leave me with this sort of burning question. So we had the play. So Poe Dameron, the amazing resistance pilot, he, you know, initially was, you know, set free by Finn, and they went to the surface of Jakku because he needed to get his droid back. Right. And he disappears. Finn's left on his own. Now, I know from other things I've read that apparently initially the way it was written, he was actually not ever supposed to come back. He was supposed to have been dead at that point. But J.J. Abrams liked Oscar Isaac enough from that footage that he found a way to bring him back for the later part of the movie. But my issue is, so when we find him again, when he meets up with Finn again later, you know, you hear his story of how he, you know, woke up and ended up just getting out of there. I'm like, I didn't think this at first, but I read this later. It's like, why didn't he continue to look for BB-8? Why didn't he stay there and look for his missing droid? If that was so important at that point, why wasn't it still important to him?
Well, I mean, we don't really know what happened. I mean, he could have wandered around for a while. I mean, how did he get off that planet in the first place? He's a clone. There it is.
Clone.
And that's how they're bringing Boba Fett back.
Oh, Star Wars Episode 8, the new Clone Wars.
See, now I didn't see that one, and that's one plot hole I did not think of at all. So now I'm going to be wondering that. Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
Yeah, but we don't. I mean, we don't know what happened. Like he.
Sure. And then maybe there could be more that he's left out. Yeah, like maybe he contacted the Resistance base and found out they had already been, you know, picked up and were, so there wasn't a reason for him to look for the droid because the droid was already, you know, picked up by Finn and moved on from that place. But they didn't say it explicitly, so you don't really know.
Right.
All right. Jeez, you know, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. Damn it.
How about some Easter eggs?
Well, I did read a couple different, like, Easter egg articles, but to me, like, when they talk about Easter eggs in the Marvel movies, they talk about little things that connect them together or foreshadow things to come.
Right.
You know, this was more like
nostalgia Easter eggs, mostly.
Nostalgia Easter eggs. And some of them were so big and blatant, it's like, well, it's not, I mean, Yes, she was living in an ad. Like, of course, but that's a huge, big, blatant Easter egg.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that kind of Easter egg, though. I'm talking about there's some more subtle ones. One of the ones I find pretty interesting is there was that scene at Maz Kanata's place, or Kanata's place, where she first touched the, where Rey first touched the lightsaber, and she had those visions, right? And amongst them, there's all sorts of little, you know, video and audio snippets that just rush past in a montage. It's a little too fast to really consume. But apparently amongst the things in there, there's, you can hear Luke Skywalker saying no, and it's a clip literally from the end of Empire Strikes Back. You can hear Yoda speaking, and it was actually, Frank Oz actually came in and recorded a segment for that. And there's also a line by Obi-Wan Kenobi where it says, "Rey, these are your first steps." And what's really interesting about that is the saying of the name Rey was actually pulled from an audio clip of Alec Guinness saying the word afraid, and they narrowed the audio to just get the name Rey out of it. But the rest of the line, they brought in Ewan McGregor to do that voiceover.
Ah, so it was both Obi-Wans.
It was both Obi-Wans. And that I find really fascinating, that they planted all of that deep seed in that one tiny nugget.
Yes, there was a lot of things thrown in that montage. It was just like, I don't think anyone really knew what was going on in that, other than them showing, you know, Luke and R2 and the Knights of Ren real quick. But, you know, there was other things going on there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was more prepared for it the second time around when I went today for the second time in 2 days. And because the first time I saw it, I did not really catch Yoda's line and Obi-Wan's line. But then reading last night, when I went in today, I was prepared for it and I heard it, and I was all very giddy about it. And, you know, you see the scene with Luke and R2 is curious, because it probably is foreshadowing to the next film, I would guess. Although it's not, you don't get a lot out of it. I mean, you don't really know what's going on. You just sort of imagine them sitting by a fire together. And then there's also, you see her upcoming battle with Kylo Ren in the snow, which I thought was interesting. Like, when I first saw the quips with the first time around, the first viewing, I only thought it was, you know, she'd seen things that had happened. But then when I watched it again today, I realized that there were, you know, things to come that she saw, which I thought was pretty fascinating as well.
Right. I did not actually jump to the conclusion that the Luke's hand on R2 was future vision. And it may well be. I actually, and that's part of what cemented in my mind some of Rey's background, is that was a memory of when, you know, after Kylo Ren had destroyed all the Jedi class, and that was the aftermath of it, and she was that was a memory of her own, of her seeing that scene, being the last survivor.
I like that better. Let's go with that.
Yes. No, I agree with Zach. I like that better. Yeah, no, it's well established that visions in the Star Wars universe could be things to come, or can be things that happened in the past. So it's not that is what makes that confusing when you watch that scene as well. But yeah,
although they also, Yoda said that visions of the future are usually only emotions, that they're not usually able to be, you know, fully appreciated and as a coherent event.
Right. But yeah, but she did see, as Zach pointed out, their future fight on the planet. You know, and there was another Easter egg when they were trying to repair the Falcon, and Rey's trying to get Finn to hand her apart. And like, no. One of the things that he picks up and tosses is the training droid from A New Hope.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
Nice.
Nice.
That was a one that was in there that I think a lot of people missed.
Oh, wait, no, that's it, just to clarify, is that the scene where he's actually trying to fix Chewie? Where he's trying to fix up Chewie and he's picked up the training droid?
No, I think it's when they're trying to prevent the poison gas from venting.
Okay. It's a little round droid, right?
Yes.
Oh my god, that makes so much more sense now. I thought it was, oh my god, I'm an idiot. I thought it was like a jokey toy BB-8. You know, like a Target toy BB-8 that he picked up. I was like, wait, can we rewind that? I need to see that again. That makes so much more sense than it was the training droid. Oh, thank you for that.
Well, you know, if you didn't see the little Walmart tag on it, then you know. I mean, if this isn't about marketing, what else is it?
Well, of course, the Star Wars movies are completely about marketing.
So was every cartoon that we grew up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is true. That every cartoon we grew up with was a half-hour commercial. I'm trying to like think what else we could talk about before we run out of time here. I would
suggest two things. One, okay. What questions do we have for the future of this series? And two, you know, summarize our thoughts on the movie.
Okay. Before we get to the questions, I will say this. I found a really cool article called 25 Unanswered Questions from Star Wars The Force Awakens. And it is on slashfilm.com. I will post this, a link to this article in the description of the episode. And they're not saying that any of this is 100% one way or the other. But what they did is taking information from the comic books and from one of the books, I can't remember which book it was, that they said was still in canon. They took information from that to try to answer some of the questions, not necessarily about things to come, but things
in this movie.
Things in this movie and how they got to the point where they're at right now.
Right.
So I will post that in the link. So talking about questions, you know, I guess the biggest burning one on everyone's mind at this point, at least on mine, is who are Rey's parents, you know, or how does she fit in with Luke and the Jedi, you know, because she's obviously more than just a kid who's good with a lightsaber, naturally.
Right. I mean, she's either his daughter or niece. There's no other possibility in my mind.
Right.
Knowing the franchise.
Well, she could be Immaculate Conception, similar to Anakin was.
Oh, God. Not the Metachlorians again. Well, they really get around, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Funny, the number they leave is always a pizza place around the corner. I don't understand.
No, but Dave, that article you're referencing, I'm wondering if when I came out of the movie the first time, the first thing I thought was she's Luke's daughter. And then my brother-in-law said, well, in the canon, there's a book that says Han and Leia have a daughter who I believe they may leave on a planet or something. I haven't read the book, so I don't actually know. But he was convinced that she was Han and Leia. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Maybe they're going by, no, is it canon, same. Old canon or new canon?
Great question.
That was probably old canon, I believe. Not necessarily... Yeah.
Extended universe.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily thinking that they're adhering to that. My open question right now with this is what's Supreme Leader Snoke's deal and where is he hiding out and why is he only available via hologram?
He's really 5 inches tall.
Yeah, I know. I was thrown at first when they showed this giant person in this cave. And then when they revealed at the end that it was just a hologram, it's like, oh, okay, he's probably compensating for something.
Mm-hmm. I had that same fear. I'm hoping that that's not the case because it'd be too Wizard of Ozzy for me. But you know, I mean, I'm hoping he is a big.
Doesn't
dude.
Even look like that.
Oh, well, that's true.
Okay. From some of the stuff I read,
I hope he's Jar Jar. Oh, I hope that's true now.
He's gonna come out at the end of the third movie. He's gonna be 5 inches tall. He's gonna, no, the power of the dark side.
Okay, so from what I've read,
squeaky voice.
From what I've read, they do say the character is 7 feet tall. So I mean, we'll see when they actually see the character in person if that's true or not. Well, now remember, we didn't see Palpatine or Darth Sidious until Return of the Jedi in person.
Right, and when we first saw Palpatine at all, he was in the form of a giant head hologram. So it follows the precedent.
Right. The other thing is, and this is again. This is based on speculation and stuff from the expanded universe, which they say really isn't canon anymore. But that he could be the reincarnated Darth Plagueis.
Plagueis.
I know I'm saying that wrong.
Assuming he ever died in the first place.
Right, right. And that character is who trained Darth Sidious in the ways of, and they said that he was so that. That he was such a powerful Sith Lord, he could create life from nothing, which is the rumor One of the stories is that he's who created Anakin Skywalker. That's where the virgin birth comes in.
Right.
In Star Wars. He actually created Anakin, who becomes Darth. Thus, again, and they're saying the reason people are pointing to that right now is saying that would be a cool thing that brings the whole story full circle.
Yeah.
Is now here's the guy who created Anakin, who created the Skywalkers, you know, bringing it full circle. So,
and I have actually heard rumors, people trying to float the idea that Jar Jar was Darth Plagueis.
Well,
there's this whole conspiracy theory that Jar Jar was a Sith, and a very powerful one, and he fooled everybody. But, you know, and there's all these points of evidence that they have for it, from The Phantom Menace.
So he was trying to take a different tact. He was trying to annoy people to death then, as opposed to actually using the Force.
He was trying purposely to seem buffoonish as a cover for the things he was actually doing. And there's a couple things that people point to, just in his dumb luck and the things he managed to Forrest Gump his way through. But also in the, like, there's a scene from that first movie where Queen Amidala is speaking to someone else, I think to Qui-Gon, and making some decisions about some things. And Jar Jar is behind her mouthing every word she says. And there's no reason for, like, he's a digital character. There's no reason for Justin blocking that, you know, as an actor, you just do that behind someone, maybe. But he was a digitally created character. There's no reason that should happen and be in the scene unless it means something.
Ooh, the plot thickens. Yes. But hopefully he doesn't come back. That's all I'm saying.
No, I agree.
Let's see. What other questions? John, come on. What questions do you have?
I'm up with one question that isn't complete, that's hopeful. One hopeful question for what
that isn't curmudgeonly.
The future movies to answer. Just one. We're just asking for one.
I know, I'm going through, I've got a list of 40 here that I'm trying to, but they're all bad. All right, let's see. So let's see. One question. Well, you know, so they got rid of the extended universe, but it looks like they're going to keep the cartoon show, as canon.
Yes.
Which means that are there other Force users out there and other masters that escaped
Order 66?
Right. There's got to be some. There's got to be others out there.
Maybe.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, it doesn't. It stands to reason.
It was impossible for them to take out every single Force user in the galaxy.
They could take out every known Jedi. That means everyone associated with the Jedi Temple and the Order. But that doesn't mean they took out every person that was sensitive to the Force and could become a Jedi.
Right, you know? But I don't even think it's possible they could have taken out everybody who's ever had training with it. You know, you could have had that one guy that got trained, missed his chance to get the title of knight and went off on his own path, came back after like 3 months in the boondocks to find, you know, Darth Vader and everything gone to hell.
Yeah.
Right. So, right. Or there's like there's
there
the guy who
just
was
the adepts out there that never were recruited.
There's also that guy at the Jedi Academy who was a straight D student and you know went to all the beer parties and you know didn't you know got kicked out, but he was trained. So
ironically, his name was Jedi Dave.
Oh jeez, I thought it was Zach, but hey, what do I?
Either way, it'd be a little plebeian for their taste, but we'll see a little bit.
I agree. And I think, like, if they're going to spend any time talking about rebuilding the Jedi Order, or at least what Luke was doing when he was trying to rebuild the Jedi, they're going to have to address that as well, I think. That there are other people out there that can use the Force.
Yeah. I think they've already sort of referenced that is the case in the fact that Luke had tried to start up a new Jedi Academy and had recruits. There were people that Kylo Ren killed.
Right.
Like it wasn't just him. Like there were multiple. And unfortunately those ones are gone, but it goes to show that there is definitely a feasibility of there being more Jedi out there. Whether they're old original Jedi who've been in hiding for decades, or new young Jedi that are just becoming sensitive to the Force. There's a lot of options and opportunities.
You know what? There's one other thing. There is actually one thing that I'd be really interested to see that nobody has addressed. Now, The way the Sith work is there's always a master and
an apprentice.
An apprentice, right. But there can't only just be one master and one apprentice. There's got to be others out there, right? So how do they interact? Like, do they are they
constantly they have a special network.
Backstab each other, outmaneuver each other? I mean, there's got to be a lot more going on out there.
They use Darthanet.
Yes, Darthnet, right.
There's actually now a social media app that they use. It's spelled VADR for Sith meetups.
Okay, Zach, how about you? Do you have any questions that you'd like to see answered that was raised in this movie?
Yeah, a couple. I have... mostly I'm just sort of ensconced by Rey. I have some hypotheses about her. I think I kind of feel like it's going to be turned on its head where she's going to find out first that she's related to Kylo Ren, and then she's going to tell him, sort of a subversion of the whole Darth Vader telling Luke. And because I think it's going to happen that way, I feel like she has to be his sister, because it would be more dramatic than saying, Kylo, I am your cousin, which just doesn't have... so much punch to it.
No, you'd be too close to the Spaceballs. I'm your cousin's sister's former roommate's pet's former owner.
exactly. And other than her relationship, I mean, I wonder why she was just abandoned by whomever. I mean, it would make more sense if it were Luke's daughter that he left her to sort of separate her. And if she is Han and Leia's daughter, then I need a lot more understanding as to why they would just drop her off and not talk about her when they reunite.
Can you imagine her saying, I'm sorry, Kylo, I'm your cousin. And he answered, second cousin?
Right. Third, I think fourth is okay in the Dagobah
system. Well, I will say this, that I think Ben kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier. One of my coworkers had a theory that, you know, they showed Kylo Ren reading minds with the Force, you know, and of course we know minds can be manipulated, weak minds can be manipulated. What if minds can be erased, you know, and that's why Rey doesn't know who she is. And maybe that's why
she's been brainwashed a bit and she doesn't really have her full memories.
And maybe that's also why if she is Han and Leia's daughter, they don't remember because their minds have been erased. Well, it doesn't matter what Han thinks anymore, but
because Luke did a really bang up job doing cleanup duty on that one.
Yeah. But I'm getting caught up on her. I guess if I had another question, it would be at this point, how are they going to ramp it up from the super mega ultra Death Star that can destroy five planets at once? Mm-hmm. You know, because I mean, yes, it was another Death Star, but this time it was just that much more potent.
Yeah.
So I hope they don't do the same thing as the original trilogy where the Death Star will come back and this time it'll take out five and a half planets.
This time they'll have a giant ring that goes around an actual star.
Yeah, there you go.
That about the galaxy.
But you notice the first Death Star, it took a force, the most powerful force wielder in the world, and to take it out. It took the lives of several hundred Bothans to get the plans to the resistance so they could figure out how to take it out. It took the entire resistance to get together and take it. And what? They came up with a plan to take out this new super Death Star in about 5 minutes, and it included a janitor, a hope, and a prayer. I mean, come on.
But it was much more technical plan than the other one seemed to be. Like, they figured out that there was there had to be a way that they were harnessing and managing this energy, and figured out and used the knowledge of, you know, the janitor to know where that was and knowing how to, you know, where to get to it.
So what we're saying is janitors are much more powerful in this universe than they are in ours.
Look, when are you going to learn, John, you can accomplish anything with a janitor and a prayer?
Have you seen school janitors and how many keys they wield? That's power.
Oh my goodness, that is power. They know how to get into any room in the
exactly.
place.
And he probably prefers the term plumbing technician anyway, so let's be respectful, Jack.
Yes, absolutely. By the way, a lot of people overlook the fact that the second Death Star was over 160 times greater in diameter than the first one. So they have been scaling these things up over, one by one.
So the next one is going
to be... You know that the only reason they're getting bigger is because of the unions, right?
Yes. No, but... Well, the thing was, though, when you blow up two, you kind of know by the third one. There's got to be a cooling system. If we get rid of the cooling system, the thing will just blow up.
No, right.
Actually carved it out of a planet. Like, it wasn't that they built that whole thing.
Right, right.
That they use a planet as a base of operations that they built this into.
Yeah, but the only reason they built this one is so that they could collect in the insurance money.
Perhaps, yes.
It's like you said. They build one, it blows up. They build a bigger one, it blows up. They build a third one. The only reason they build a third one that big is so they could take out a really nice plush insurance policy on it and then watch it go boom.
Seems like that'd be a high risk insurance policy, though. I don't think there'd be good dividends on that.
All right. Well, and
but I'm sure they sent Kylo Ren to go sign it.
You will give us a good deal on this insurance.
Because they know how to deal with them now. They're just, it's old hat. So, yeah, make another one. We can't stop your next Death Star. Please do.
Meanwhile, the Teamsters are sitting there going, oh, yes.
So my questions, real quick. Number one is, you guys have covered a lot of my questions, but now that the Republic has been destroyed, see, no one seems to talk about that.
They
wiped out the Republic when
the Resistance bases were destroyed.
No, they destroyed the Republic homeworld.
Right, yeah, and that was the thing that might have been my biggest point of contention, is that I didn't really have a feel for what the Republic was even standing for, because they, yeah. I mean, why did the Resistance still exist?
Yeah, they still were sort of a separate entity.
Yeah, did this First Order rise so prominently?
It's actually addressed in that article that I read. I don't know how, and the guy who wrote it said it's not 100%, but basically after the defeat of the Empire, and they weren't defeated right after the end of Jedi,
there was still cleanup work to do
beyond that. Right. The rebellion grew and grew in more power, and they whittled the Empire down, and it actually ended in a truce between the Empire and what they now called the New Republic. They brought the Senate back. And the Empire kind of just whittled out and turned into this First Order. And Leia, being a member of the Senate, kept saying the First Order is getting too much power. We have to do something about them. And they said, "You're just what's the word I'm looking for?
Rabble rousing."
Yes, thank you. Don't worry about it. They're blah blah blah. And since they wouldn't do anything about it, she went off and formed the Resistance.
Well, and I think there's also some degree of, there's this feeling from those who remember the Empire and its rule that pairing government with military is problematic. And so they don't want the New Republic to have a military force to fight its battles. They don't want to return to that form because it can be corrupted again. So that's why there's a explicit separation, that the Resistance, that any armies that are operating of their own accord and are not officially affiliated with the central government.
Well, also the conceit that the central government somehow is only located on an impossible star system that has so many inhabitable planets around a single star that they could be taken out so quickly by some
MacGuffin that can fire your astrophysics.
What's so that? The Old Republic shows you what it's like when you have church and state too tightly wound, with the Jedi and the Senate. And then the Empire showed you what it's like when the army or the military and the government are too tightly together. You got to have a separation of these things, people.
It's exactly. Important. They all need to be, you got to keep them separated.
That's what that song was about.
Exactly.
Exactly. So now that they're destroyed, what kind of power vacuum is that left in the galaxy, and what's going to be the outcome of that in the next movie? And then my other question was, and this is to me was a big one: how come Leia never trained to be a Jedi?
Yeah, we don't know that.
I don't think we know that, but I think my suspicion is that she felt more tightly coupled and drawn to the rebellion and the Republic, and after that the Resistance, and her role as a general, to ever give force training the its due.
Like, do we know that she's inherently capable just out of heredity?
I think they alluded to that. First of all, they alluded to that in somewhat in the original trilogy, with her being having some sense of some things. But also in this one, she knew when Han died.
Yeah.
She felt it. So she definitely is force sensitive enough to have those connections.
Wait,
now, I think it's going to go a lot farther than that. All right, so I'll give you one thing that I am hopeful for. I want to see a scene where Kylo Ren walks up to her and starts to try and probe her mind. She just smacks him upside the head and says, "Don't try that on me. I've been doing that for 40 years now." that she was trained after Jedi by Luke, because her specialty would be the mind and feelings and future sight.
Wait. Han died? No.
I'm sorry.
No, it was Chewie and Han's
when he fell.
Yes, he fell. We don't know if he's dead yet.
Into a vat of carbonite.
He fell, and him and Emperor Palpatine and Boba Fett are meeting up at the bottom of the pool, having a drink.
No, it's the villain's pub. It's the villain's pub from how it should have ended.
Do you know my son pointed out when we came out of the movie, he's like, "Well, Luke jumped down a big hole and he lived."
That's true, but he also used the force to direct his fall.
I know. And then my final, most important question about this movie. Why did they show Rey climbing that mountain for so long at the end of the movie?
Yeah, they drew that out a bit. And they drew out just that moment where they're looking at each other for a little bit longer than I think was necessary.
Yeah. It's a little creepy, actually.
Yeah, because there was one point they could have had it. They almost nailed it. Where they went from Rey to Luke to Rey and then back to Luke, and they didn't need to go back to Luke that last time.
Then they did the helicopter flyover of both of them standing there for another good minute. Like it was a little overkill on that part.
Yeah,
they should have just had dialogue. They should have had him break out into the Joker laugh at that point.
yes, and then of course aesthetically, like, why did he still have a metal hand? Like, they showed he can get a fake hand that looks real. So
he doesn't care about cosmetics these days. That was a young Luke who actually cared about how his hand looked.
That his appearance, yeah.
Yeah. Now he's function over form.
I mean, he was trying to attract his sister, I understand.
Well, yes. His hand transforms into a lightsaber now.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, and he's probably figured out how to use the left for anything important, so he's fine.
I'm sorry. That was my brain.
Like cooking, I mean. Things of that nature, guys. Yes. Come on.
Actually, you know, since we went down that road, my wife's biggest critique of the movie was Kylo Ren's helmet was too short. It should have been as long as Darth Vader's. Because when he was walking around without his hood on, she said he looked like a big penis. So...
he does have a thinner, longer neck, and that did not suit him well in that respect.
Yes, right.
He looked like he had a permanent bob cut in the form of his helmet.
Kylo Renus.
Nice.
So yes. But yeah, so I think we have talked this to death. This
horse has been beaten.
Yes, we are ending the year on a nice long episode here. So as we always do when we review these movies, we're going to go around the room. Everyone give a rating from 1 to 10 capes on what they thought of the movie. And we'll start with Zach, our guest co-host.
Yes, capes. I'm going to give it, as I did on my review on Superhero Overload that's coming out this week, that's only like 2 minutes long, so what's the point in watching it now? I'm going to give it 9.8 out of 10 capes, because nice. It's just that close.
Cool. All right. Ben?
I'm going to give it 9 capes. A solid 9. I like this a lot. I am looking forward to what's coming next. One thing I am curious, I hope we get more Phasma in the future.
I kind of felt she was the Boba Fett of this movie.
A little bit, but I'm hopeful that that's just a temporary thing.
Yeah, I think so too.
And Mr. O'Grady.
I'm going to give it 9 sad capes.
How do you berate a movie and then give it such a high rating?
Is that because equivalent to like 4 happy capes?
probably that could be debated. It's just that, like I said, you know, I was at the movie theater 3 hours before it started. I was only alone for about 5 minutes. An hour and a half before the movie started, the theater was already half full. The entire theater cheered at several times, which you probably know exactly which times those were. As soon as I started walking out, going, man, that is great. They brought it back, and wait a minute, what the freak? It only took me like 5 to 10 minutes to start picking it apart and seeing how how they had taken good storytelling and slapped on the Transformers, Star Trek, everybody running explosions everywhere thing onto it, and just, you know, I mean, yes, it's great. It was a great movie, but it doesn't bode well for the storytelling of the future.
I don't know if you can cast everything in the light of what you took from this one. There's a lot of people being involved in every single, like, there, everything that's coming going in the future, there's many, many people involved. It's not just one vision. It's not just one point of view. And so you can't take away from this that this is a reflection in a negative way necessarily on what episode 8 and 9 and on are going to be, or what the anthology interstitial movies are going to be, because there's a lot of other people involved and a lot of different views and a lot of different visions that will come into play.
I have only one thing to say to that. Star Trek Into Darkness.
Which he's already apologized for. And the new director's not even paying attention to the pieces of that were giant plot holes. The things that she tore apart.
So. All right.
Dave, your turn.
I'm still in shock that you gave it a 9.
Sad capes, man.
It's 9 sad 9 capes. Sad capes. Wow. All right, little
Mighty Mouse sad capes.
So what I'm going to say is, if you look at the entire, you know, franchise, the 7 movies that we've seen so far, mm-hmm. you know, and I put Empire and Jedi at the top, you know, they would be 10 capes, you know, and then New Hope would be 9, and then Clone Wars would be 1.
You mean Phantom Menace wouldn't be below that? I would think Phantom Menace would be 1. Clone Wars maybe a 2 or a 3.
See, but Phantom Menace gave me one of my favorite lightsaber duels of all of the movies.
Yeah, but there were probably some pretty awesome action sequences in all of Michael Bay's movies, and that doesn't make them redeemable.
And besides, one janitor could have beaten all those guys.
So,
plumbing technician.
So I'm just putting that, you know, put it in perspective of where the movies are in my mind. So I'm actually going to just give it an 8, maybe an 8.5, an 8.5. Just because, number one, we know it's not a complete story, so we want to see where it goes from here. And there were a couple little errors that we all talked about. Was it better than prequels? Yes. Was it as good as the original trilogy? Not, you know, I don't feel it was. But I felt there was a lot of potential. I really enjoyed the characters they introduced. I can't wait to see what they do with them going forward. So it's a 10 out of 8.5, you know. I'm just putting that out there. So yeah, that's my opinion.
All right.
So don't beat me up later, guys.
Oh, well.
All right. So there you have it. That is our review of Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
So now you don't need to see it. Giving everything away.
Don't forget to catch Zach on his YouTube channel. Superhero Overload. Sorry, Zach.
That's okay. I almost forgot earlier too. I almost called it Superhero Speak. I have to rethink my name.
You can catch him every Wednesday on YouTube or every Friday on SuperheroSpeak.com. We just post his videos from Wednesday every Friday. And yes, and of course you can catch. Oh, and don't you have something new coming out that you want to tell people about?
I do. I have a new channel coming out within the next few weeks called Let Me Learn You Stuff.
I saw the thing for that. I mean to check that out myself.
Thank you. Good. It's intentionally ironic because I'm not that bright, so I'm not going to be able to teach you anything of value or even veracity. So
makes me feel even better about it, actually.
Yeah, good, good. Please, in the comments, if you could just correct me when I'm wrong, which will be in every video, that would be fantastic.
I will gladly.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can check that out, facebook.com/ZachEHow, or look up Let Me Learn You Stuff on YouTube. Hashtag LMLYS, because that's stupid.
That rolls off the tongue.
I couldn't do much better.
Zach, don't ever tell Ben to correct you, because...
Nice.
You opened a Pandora's box there, man.
No, that's... Yes, exactly. So, to all of our fans out there, just a reminder, or just to let you know that this is going to be our last recorded episode of 2015.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Merry New Year, Merry New Year, Happy New Year.
No way.
We have pre-recorded a 2015 wrap-up that you will hear next week, but... we're going to be off for the holidays, so we will catch you in 2016, people. Thanks for listening. Thanks for putting up with us. And until next year.
Resolve not to get your cape get caught in the door.
Yes.
Don't anger a janitor.
Plumbing technician!
yes, don't anger a plumbing technician. All right. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn.
Okay, what are you doing?
Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh.
Well, there are better ways to join the conversation.
Really? Like what?
Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest.
Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google Plus?
I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book videos, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list.
Cool!
Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic?
Nope, I'm going to try to answer the Stump the Key question.
Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl?
Oh, that's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. Run for your lives!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's gonna get caught in the door.
Ow!